we'll post it online.
Okay. Well, you know, that's something that someone could be saying right now, here and today, about how the mainstream media covers the movements that are happening all around us and in the street. Haskell was a fierce critic of the mainstream media, and so many of his documentary films are skeptical of what is the political line that we're being taught through mainstream media, and he wanted to have an alternative to that.
Pamela Yates, we're going to continue this conversation and post it at democracynow.org. Pam Yates is the director of the documentary Rebel Citizen, about the life of renowned cinematographer Haskell Wexler. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. So much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is more talk radio with guest host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Adam Kravitz from Vancouver's affordable housing activist group Outsiders In, who will be hosting an event this coming Wednesday entitled Homeless Memorial Day.
My landlord's a wealthy man, a living offering like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally and march organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors, if you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors, you know you should fight for a right for the common good.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid. With each passing year, the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. become more and more necessary to remember. With this in mind, the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, there will be a variety of local and regional choirs, performers, and entertainers, all paying homage to the work and legacy of Dr. King and our efforts to keep his dream alive. So remember, Monday, January the 18th, at the Highland Christian Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and of course, right here on KBOO FM radio.
The greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
Good morning. It's 8:03 and you're listening to More Talk Radio. Sitting in for Cecil and Celeste this morning, I'm Lisa Loving. And today, with the growing number of Hoovervilles organizing across the region, will they force local governments to act on affordable housing and jobs? We are with, on the phone today, Adam. He's one of the organizers of the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver. We're going to hear a lot more about that event and what's happening with our friends and neighbors and family members in Clark County. Adam, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Lisa. I am doing fine.
Adam, tell us about the group Outsiders In.
Outsiders In is a local grassroots advocacy group that started because there was a need. There's lots of gaps in the systems. And from here in Vancouver, homelessness has been shoved under the rug and criminalized for a lot of years. And now there is a growing movement to shift that change into a more logical, smart way of providing services. So what I did is I started a group to provide one-on-one resource navigation with people, and also to get my way into coalition meetings and boardroom meetings and in city council meetings, and be able to bring the voice of the homeless to those meetings so they're providing services a little smartly.
Mm. Adam, so Portland, I mean, KBOO is based here in Portland. We hear so much about houselessness issues here in Portland, but much less about Clark County. Can you talk to us about trends you're seeing in Clark County, and what are people doing over there?
Well, one of the best things that's happened here in Clark County is that for the first time, I believe that Vancouver is the first city to actually amend their camping ordinance without the fear of litigation. In other words, they did not have any litigation pending, and they decided to change their ordinance to allow for camping between 9:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. That was a great move in itself. Of course, it brought a whole new set of problems that they didn't anticipate, but it's part of the shift in thinking that's happening. Along with that, there's a couple other movements that are just starting to happen as far as local churches coming together and providing safe car camping. So we've developed a program that provides for churches to allow people to camp in their parking lots in their vehicles overnight. Along with that, you might have seen in the news a local organization providing huts for individuals. And those we're also trying to develop a program to provide some sort of structure around these different programs. We're trying to establish structure and a program, so we're not just saying, here, park, and we're not going to do anything for you. We're trying to establish a program that brings services to the individuals.
We are live on the phone this morning with Adam. He's one of the organizers of the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver, which is coming up on December 30th. And that event is at Esther Short Park in Vancouver. It's at 7 p.m. at the main stage. They do have a Facebook page, Outsiders In, and In is spelled I-N-N. Outsiders In. Listeners, we've been to this rodeo. We've been to this rodeo for a long time now. I feel as if this brings back many of the issues that Occupy put front and center. I'm so curious between the connection between what happened during the Occupy of a few years ago and what's happening now. Because I know that there are still some Occupy organizations out there that are agitating on this issue, especially the Elder Council of the Portland Occupy Movement. But listeners, I just want to throw open the phone lines, 503-231-8187. Are you active on these issues trying to help people find housing right now? What are you seeing out there? And what questions do you have? So back to Adam. Adam, you know, I had asked at the beginning of this show, you know, I'm calling them Hoovervilles. Hoovervilles were spontaneous communities of houseless people that were thrown up all across the United States during the Great Depression. They were called Hoovervilles because Hoover was president, and people literally named their houseless encampments after the president. I was asking Adam, you know, will the growing number of Hoovervilles organizing across our region, across the West, force local governments to act on affordable housing and jobs? But Adam, is that even the right question? What questions should we be asking ourselves right now and asking our government officials?
You know, actually, that's a good point that you brought that up, because what happened in Vancouver if you've seen the news, but what happened as soon as the ordinance was lifted is that A number of individuals just started camping in a certain location around our main shelter here in Vancouver Share House. And within a few weeks, we had over 150 campers camped. And they didn't read the ordinance well, and they didn't tear up their camps each day. So they just made permanent camping all around the area of Share House. And that, in fact, actually did open the eyes of our city leaders. And unfortunately, they, after so much time, they started to enforce the camping law and made the campers move on during the morning. And so it caused a mass exodus of individuals at a certain point. So it hurt us in the long run, but it was definitely very eye-opening, as, you know, having 150 people camping in a neighborhood was a big wake-up call for Vancouver. And now there is a lot of people that are still working on and are trying to figure out what to do for our long-term solution.
Listeners, we are on the phone with Adam, and we're talking about the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver at Esther Short Park. I believe it's Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
At 7 p.m. at the main stage. That's December 30th. You know, here in Portland also, and I was even reading some articles, the council, I want to say the United States Council of Mayors, just came out with a study about how much it costs to keep, what is the hourly wage it costs in states all around the United States just to pay for a two-bedroom apartment. In the state of Oregon, I believe it was $16.61. In the state of Washington, it was closer to $20 an hour. So a lot of times here in Portland, we're talking about mental health and we're talking about housing. The issue of jobs is right there, though, and it's such a hot potato, people don't really pick it up. But anyway, Adam, talk about how you came to this issue. I've been reading some of your social media. Do you, in your day job capacity, work with the community? What brought you to this work?
Well, primarily the number one thing that brought me to this work is that I spent about 6 years outside as a houseless person myself, due to trauma and things that happened in my life. And once I started healing and realizing that I wanted to find my way back, I seen that it was almost insurmountable, the amount of to go from having nothing to trying to get established. There needs to be help. There needs to be one system or another that helps an individual. And I was realizing that while I was out there, I was helping lots of other individuals myself. I would gather food and then I'd give it away, and it was just an endless cycle. And I found myself stuck, and I knew that no one was ever going to take me seriously about what I seen until I actually got myself out of being stuck out there. So, currently I work as a peer support specialist for a local recovery organization, and in my process of getting myself together and getting myself back on my feet and inside housing, I just never let go of the ideas that I had, and I developed this organization.
Mm. And we are talking about houselessness issues in the West. We're talking about the Homeless Memorial Day this week, December 30th at Esther Short Park in Vancouver. And Adam, I've been seeing on social media, I've been reading the newspapers. I don't watch television news so much, but I feel as if I've been seeing a lot of coverage in newspapers that may or may not be dailies anymore. I'm not always sure how to refer to the Oregonian anymore, but I feel as if there's big parts of the story that are not included in the reporting that I've read. And so some things that I've seen, been reading about Vancouver that interested me was this move towards basically, for some of the houselessness camps in Vancouver, this move towards getting some more permanent buildings from, say, an Office Depot store, like setting up, sheds for people to live in. Can you talk a little bit about how people in Vancouver area have been innovating with their houselessness communities, maybe compared to Portland? I'm not sure how much you track Portland either. But did I read that right? People are going to the home despot, as I call it, and getting these sheds and setting them up. Did I understand that right?
that hasn't happened of yet, but that is a project that us outsiders and a local pastor and the Council for the Homeless, we came up with a plan it's an emergency, temporary emergency shelter situation where we would, in fact, buy 40 of 8x10 sheds, insulate them, and then along with those, we would have two community trailers and that would provide dining and lounging and meetings. And pretty much the plan was, and it still is, we had a location set and that location backed out. And now we are working on a second location. It has to be at a church in order for us to avoid the zoning and other type ordinance laws. We needed a church to partner with. But the idea is to house approximately 50 of the most vulnerable of our homeless population, and that would be single women, couples, people with pets, people that wouldn't normally go into shelter any other way. But if we provided them with, it's along the same lines as the Housing First model, but under using a temporary emergency shelter guidelines. Mm. And we would provide support instead of case management, and encouragement instead of, that top-down approach. It would be more of a peer approach.
Hey, listeners, we are on the phone right now with Adam. We're talking about Clark County. We're talking about Vancouver area houselessness issues. We're talking about what's different there compared to Portland. The city of Vancouver government basically legalized camping between 9:30 p.m. and 6:30 in the morning, something like that. So, and you know, how do we look at our community here and figure out how to actually solve this issue? I mean, the issue of houselessness in general, but it just seems like it's, as you know, listening to Adam tell how he came to this issue, we see so many of these housing issues are connected to, and we think that they're connected to issues of substance abuse. We think that they're connected to issues of joblessness. Sometimes I wonder about that, or mental health. Sometimes I wonder, Adam, I wonder what would happen if we actually, what I thought was really fascinating about the Occupy was that so many people came out of the shadows and said, no, wait, I don't have a place to live. And so many of our Occupy communities all over the United States were huge. And they scared the elected officials when the elected officials realized how many people were not being served by all the tax money that we pay. Adam, like, how do we even quantify who's really housing insecure, whether it's Clark County or Multnomah County? Because those numbers are staggering, and I don't think that we ever really see the real numbers.
I think you're absolutely correct. And even when they do count the numbers, they don't count the people that are couch surfing. They don't count the people that are doubling up in places. They don't count the all the families that are from different cultures that's what they automatically do, you know. I think part of what I want to happen, especially doing this memorial, I'm hoping to put in the paperwork to make it a official day on the 21st, like a lot of cities do. But more importantly, what I'm hoping is that we can put in a system that we're actually tracking all of those who have passed without an address, because there are way more than what we know about, and they just go by the wayside, and there needs to be a way to track that, and I think that will help us track actual numbers for the county and for the region as well.
You know, our beloved sister community media outlet Street Roots did some amazing coverage about that earlier this year, where they talked about the difference between people who literally die in the streets, on the sidewalks, of exposure because they don't have shelter, and like trying to get a real count of that, because somehow the city doesn't track how many people die in hospital facilities without an address. So even trying to just get bureaucrats on the same page to quantify how large is this problem is itself a problem. I just have to ask you, Adam, and listeners, please don't wait until the end of the show to call 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller, but I just have to ask, Adam, you know, as someone who's in the thick of this issue, I see so many, people, I'm a white middle class woman of privilege, absolutely, and I try to track what's really going on in the communities using social media. If you could put, and I see other people like me, you know, arguing over this issue and how it can be resolved. What is the most important thing for people who are living in privilege now, right, to understand about this issue?
That has been my number one goal throughout this whole process. In order to get support, I need, you know, changing people's perception is my number one goal. And homelessness is not what you think. It's not what anyone thinks. Trauma is the number one reason for homelessness. And economic is the second reason. So if you think about that, you know, the people that are outside, trauma being number one and economics the second, you know, if we can change people's perception and then, so educate. My call to action is to educate. Homelessness is not what you think. The people that are homeless are not who you think. You know, one of the things we do is we tell people stories and we humanize the faces of homelessness through one of our pages. And it's huge. It's not... I will say this over and over again. It's not who and what you think. And so many times when I was outside, it wasn't whether someone gave me something. It was whether someone looked me in the eye and said hi to me today and treated me like I wasn't dirty and treated me like I wasn't something to be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's about respect and it's about humanizing. And if you educate yourself and you know what it's really about, then you can support and you can push your local politicians to change the laws, and you can be part of the solution and not just sit on the sidelines.
Mm. All right, and give us a call. Participate in this conversation, 503-231-8187. And we have Joanne on the line. What are you thinking about, Joanne?
Well, I first came to Portland the end of the 1980s, broken down and everything, and came to almost landed on the street, and Burnside Projects got a hold of me, and they sent me to get help in this Vancouver VA hospital. I was the second, I can't think of the right word, female in there. Yeah, I got housing and food and some medical attention, but I had, of course, I didn't want to socialize with vets in there. I got oppressed overtly and openly, but somehow I landed back in Portland with the Rose Apartments falling through the cracks. But well, one of the questions I want to ask, I guess like all the other states in the United States, Vancouver, Washington has been gentrified and privatized. Anyway, I just want to say what I'm saying. I'm so disgusted, not only with people like Trump, with the middle class who have good lives and that, not really doing anything about these ongoing bad problems that I still have to live with. Thank you for listening.
All right. And there's Joanne. She, Joanne's bringing up the issue of where people are getting services. I've seen some people, as I was looking around some of the social media around what's happening in Vancouver, what's happening in Portland. We're seeing in Portland where there's a couple places where the city has allowed houseless communities to remain that are working on self-governing councils. And yet there are people, like Joanne just said, middle-class people that are trying to help that are getting... that are arguing about this on the other social media that's called Backdoor, where middle-class people talk to each other about, you know, our middle-class neighborness. And I'm on there, too. And so I'm telling you, it's pretty interesting to see what makes people upset. But it's... I see people like Joanna saying, you know, when is the middle class going to start to understand that this totally affects them? This is our kids, actually. Can you talk a little bit, Adam, about the success of some of the, as Joanne was saying, the services? There are some services out there. And I was reading some things on the social media about another homeless encampment where people were just complaining that there's nothing that it's got to be the government's fault and only the government can help and that everyday people can't help at all. So it makes people think there is nothing that you can do. So who is helping? Just to start, Adam, who's helping people that are houseless right now?
You know what? There's a lot of help. This is the thing I was thinking when you were speaking about this, is that it's very disconnected. There's not enough collaboration and communication. There's a lot of proprietary attitudes, like if I'm helping, then you can't help, and then people don't want to step on each other's toes, and if somebody else is already helping, then they must not need more help. And so there's not enough collaboration. Collaboration is the only way that that real change is going to happen. There can't be all this separatist attitude when it comes to providing services. What I see in Portland going on right now, especially with the ad hoc little encampments, is that they're getting in, they're fighting a good fight, and the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing when it comes to city, county, state, and law enforcement. And so they're constantly being, you know, as soon as they get a little bit of a reprieve, then someone else is stepping in and saying no, you know. And it's disheartening to see a group form and have leadership and be structured and disciplined, and they have people working and they're working from their tents, and then to find out that, oh, they're a little bit on this land, and so this organization's going to come in and tell them no, or the railroad's going to tell them no, or law enforcement isn't listening to the supervisors and they're going to tell them no. And it's a constant battle. And if you're constantly battling for survival, then how can you thrive? So over here, this new temporary emergency shelter that we're talking about, it wouldn't have happened if it wouldn't have been for church leaders coming together with the Council for the Homeless, coming together with the city and county, and everybody agreeing that this is something that needs to happen. So survival is dependent on collaboration, and services have to be collaborated. Some of our shelter systems over here use that old top-down approach, and they've been overworked, underpaid, and are kind of disheartened. So I believe that a change in services, changing the type of services we deliver, is vital. I think it needs to be a more supportive and encouraging service model, as opposed to a top-down case management type model.
You know, and here's another thing about that strikes me is 3 years ago in Portland, when our mayor, Charlie Hales, was first elected, at that time, there was actually a houseless encampment. It was like a continuing protest of houseless people who were camping all around City Hall. And the first press release that I received in my newsroom from Charlie Hale, maybe it was the second one, was about how the city was going to push these people out from around City Hall. It was a very long, very emotional press release, I have to say, extremely tone deaf. The person that wrote it from the mayor's staff was not aware that there was a 10-year plan that Portland was supposedly working under. I believe that like the fourth 10-year plan or something that's been proposed. Through the county even was just unveiled a couple of weeks ago. But when I read this press release, I just thought, oh my God, you know, the person that wrote this press release has no idea what the history is of this issue. The person that wrote this press release from inside the mayor's office has no idea what the history of houselessness is as a policy. And the mayor's paying that person a whole lot of money to do that. And it just blew my mind. It's like you said, it's like people, literally bureaucrats in offices, in cubicles, all over the state, because here in Oregon, we're looking at the Oregon Department of Transportation, which is actually almost said something obscene there. The Oregon Department of Transportation, which is cracking down, like you said, you know, two of those tents are on ODOT land. They're not in Portland land. It's like literally people who don't care, who are bureaucrats that are getting paid a lot of money to sit there and shuffle stuff around. It just blew my mind. We have a couple of callers. The number to call, 503-231-8187. We have Ren. Ren, what's going on? Thanks for calling.
Hey. Good morning. Good to hear you guys talk.
You too. Ren, talk about, so Ren, if I understand that you're the Ren that I think that you are, you yourself have been very active in trying to hook people up with housing and push forward the policy issues of housing for the houseless. Talk about your work and what you see going on right now.
Well, I help Adam with Outsiders Inn. I work with the administrative side of it. And I've been digging in and learning a lot about the homelessness issue in Vancouver. I come from Midwestern states and kind of facing it here on this coast. It's been new. And at the same time, old stories too. So it's been fun to get involved and see real change happening.
Ren, so as a person who's from the Midwest, does it seem, I'm from the Western states. Why does it seem like the Western states have so many unhoused people? Can I just ask you that? I'm sure a lot of people are thinking that. Is it because our weather is less extreme? What is going on there? Do you know?
Well, it's a good question. I felt like it was probably weather driven, and it's also a little bit more progressive. I think people believe that the, you know, surf and sunshine, the ideas of, like, you know, California and then the whole West Coast, but then you come up to the Pacific Northwest, it's not quite so warm anymore.
Ren, can you, so you have helped organize the homeless Memorial Day that's coming up this Wednesday. Can you talk a little bit about what's going to happen there and who should come and what they should bring?
Well, we're going to be meeting at the Esther Short Main Stage Park, and people are encouraged to bring a candle for the vigil. We'll have a few of them there, but it would be nice if people tried to bring their own. And we're going to have some people giving words of love and words of hope, and we're going to be honoring those who have passed away this past year and previously on the streets in Vancouver.
All right.
And so we'll be able to honor them and to hopefully then pull together as a group of people and be able to organize better solutions so we don't have anybody else have to be alone on the streets and dying.
So, Ren, let me ask you right here today, for people who are coming there on Wednesday, can you think of any of the groups of people that you've been working with and meeting, any other things that people might want to bring to that event, like for people that are camping out, say, for example, water or anything like that?
Well, I know that there's a lot of groups in town that are working on winter item drives, and so we could probably, we were not necessarily requiring anybody to bring donations. However, we will have donation box available there, and if people would like to bring items of warmth, hats, gloves, blankets, we would be happy to get them dispersed to the organizations that are getting those items out onto the street.
All right. So, Ren, I just wanted to ask you one last thing. As someone who's out there trying to help support people and bring, like Adam said, that level of organization or coordination, what are some of the most remarkable things that you've seen happening in the houseless communities up there in Vancouver and Clark County that you want to share? I mean, because there's people listening now who would do something if they could, or who know who else can help. So what are some of the things that you've seen, and what are some of the things that you've seen that really touched you?
It never ceases to amaze me how caring the people of the Vancouver community are, both the people on the streets who are, you know, struggling, and then the people who are seeing their struggle and reaching out and trying to help. There are a lot of social media groups that are pulling together to help food shortages, housing shortages, rental, pointing people different directions. There's a lot of activity, and the people who are on the streets are learning how to plug into those groups and to resources and trying to navigate them a little bit more effectively. There's these two guys that we had helped recently that were, when we talked to them, they were, you know, how are you doing? And then they would always talk about their campmates. And they were more so concerned about the people that they were, you know, with more so than the people, you know, than themselves. And those are the things that always kind of touch my heart, is like when you're sitting there seeing them struggle and they're hurting and then they're still caring about somebody else's well-being. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's where we're all at on different levels. And I think that's, it's an amazing thing. And I think that that's where the solutions are going to be found, in being, you know, seeing those human moments and building up on them.
All right. All right, Ren. Anything else before we cut you loose? Anything else that people should remember?
No, that's it.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling.
Okay. Bye, Ren.
Okay, thanks.
That was Ren. There's a whole bunch of people who are helping out with this. I just want to say, on Wednesday, December 30th, at the main stage at Esther Short Park, it's the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver, Washington, at 7 p.m. Adam is going to give a welcome. There's going to be an opening prayer by Bill Ritchie of the Crossroads Community Church. Words of love from Lucinda Ledgerwood of the Live Love Center. There's going to be a memorial candle lighting ceremony, a chance for small remembrances from the audience, songs of remembrance by a guest musician. There's going to be words of hope from council member elect Ty Stober. Okay. And closing prayer by Christopher Gudger Rains from United Methodist Church. And we are on the phone. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Cecil and Celeste. We are on the phone with Adam, one of the organizers of the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver that's coming up this week. And we're talking about this issue of chronic houselessness, this chronic failure of our, I mean, is it a failure of our government? It seems like it to me. We're spending a lot of money on war. We're spending a lot of money on the military. They're constantly asking for more money. But where does the money never seem to go? Never, maybe, am I exaggerating? But it does make me wonder. And the other question, the other big question I have right now is, how were the Hoovervilles resolved back in the 1930s? One of the things that strikes me about the work that Adam is doing and Ren are doing, a lot of the people that they're helping are veterans, right? A lot of the people that we're dealing with in this country that don't have a place to live or who are dealing with, grappling with mental health problems or problems with jobs are war veterans. They're military veterans. And I think that one of the biggest things that happened during the Great Depression was a veterans' march on Washington, D.C. I believe there was a homeless veterans march on D.C. that really freaked out the federal government. But I want to throw this question out there. How were the Hoovervilles resolved back in the 30s, and how does that relate to what we're going through today? And 503-231-8187. And we have some people on the line. We have Michael on the line. Michael, what are you thinking about right now?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You know, first of all, you have to understand the real estate climate in Oregon right now. First of all, there's a shortage of housing in Oregon, which means that people with good paying jobs can't buy houses, so they're forced to rent. So if they're having problems with housing, then what that's going to really impact people that don't have jobs. They're going to be really in a bad situation. So, first of all, you have to look at the real estate climate. There's just a shortage of houses. Also, if you want to, in my opinion, deal with homelessness, I think you have to deal with, you have to go to banks, because there are some foreclosures. There are some houses out there that are sitting up vacant through the foreclosures, and they're not being occupied. And so I would think you would have to go deal with REO departments within banks and see if they can do something. I do have a question, though. Why is it that there's no homelessness among animals? Why is it that all the animals in society have shelters but people don't? What's going on there? Why is there's money for animals, for shelters, stuff like that, but there's no resources for people? I mean, answer that question for me. I'll talk to you later.
All right. And so Michael's putting some bubbling pots on the table. He brought this up about how come we have, basically what I hear Michael say, how come we have a dog pound but we don't have a human pound? And Michael, this is going to sound really harsh. I'm putting this out to you. The dog pound for humans is called the jail system, and a lot of these people that are houseless are getting swept right into it. So quite frankly, there's another analysis that looks at how our prison systems around the United States are poverty machines, right? So someone gets popped on the max train for not having a full fare, or they don't have the receipt that shows they paid. Now they've got like a tail that follows them through the legal system. The next thing that happens to them, it gets worse and worse and worse. So I think, unfortunately, that we do actually have a dog pound for humans. It's called the prison system, and it makes people more crazy. It makes people less able to function when they get out. And, you know, it's another interesting thing, too, Michael. I saw one of these middle-class folks on social media talking about bringing back the work farms, bringing back the poorhouse. That freaked me out. I'm freaked out. People, don't say stuff like that, because a poor farm was also a form of incarceration. Edgefield and, you know, Michael and also Joanne, they brought up this issue of gentrification. Edgefield is this gigantic, wonderful facility that's run by the McMenamins company, and it used to be the poor farm. Don't imagine for even one second that anybody wants to go live there like that now, right? You're right. That place is considered to be haunted because of all the people that probably died horribly there. And now I'm mixing the metaphysical with the physical, and that's complicated. Adam, did you want to respond to any of that so far?
Well, I did. Michael brought up a very good point, and that is, and especially in Vancouver right now, we are in a high housing crisis. We have less than 1% vacancy rate, and the landlords are raising their rents as fast as they possibly can. And so if people, that is another call to action, is be involved in the local policy and practices and ordinances and laws. And when you see something that talks about affordable housing, educate yourself and vote. Yeah, be part of the solution. There is, you know, it's a bad situation over here, and that's going to be part of it. It can't just be provide more shelters and provide more emergency shelters. It has to be, let's look at our housing, let's look at our zoning, let's look at how apartments are being built, how much are being offered to the affordable housing market. You know, are they going to be affordable to the renters? These are things that people need to be involved in and look at and educate themselves about.
You know, and that goes back to what Michael was saying. You know, he was talking about gentrification. He was talking about, you're over there in Vancouver, Washington State. Michael is talking about the real estate climate in Oregon. He's saying that the shortage of housing has to do with banks and the real estate industry. I think there's some truth to that. The Portland State University professor, Gibson, Kathleen Gibson, I'm not getting that right, who's really the expert on gentrification, she basically says that gentrification comes from real estate agents, banks, and local government, which together, those three institutions collaborate to create the best profit for themselves, and in the meantime, create a gigantic deficit for everyday people. This is More Talk Radio. I'm sitting in for Cecil and Celeste. My name is Lisa. We're on the phone with Adam, for, one of the organizers of the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver. We're talking about issues of houselessness. The number to call, 503-231-8187, and we've got Mitch on the phone. Mitch, what are you thinking about today?
Well, I'm thinking, first of all, I want to thank you for putting the proper focus and attention where it needs to be, Lisa, and you bring so much knowledge from trying to work within the system that it is very useful your anecdote about Mayor Charlie Hales, yet the latest in a group of reform candidates who are going to change things that hadn't changed before, and the example of the bureaucrat who was getting paid such a great salary, and yet she had no sense of the institutional memory of the 10-year plan. That, it, to me, is illustrative of the problems we have, because I'm always lamenting the amnesia in the general population. But then when you look at the specialized class that is supposed to be dealing with social problems and find out that they have the same institutional amnesia, and they are expected to have advanced knowledge, which is justifying their high salaries, you see. And so that's one thing. But the larger thing is this paradigm shift where I hear caller after caller, and these are the people with the fewest resources and the most stressed, having to talk about a situation that is national in scope, and we're talking about it on a city and a county level. And I think this is ridiculous. When I talk about a paradigm shift, I mean, if we were just to ask anybody on the street, look at the homeless in camp. First of all, hiding the homeless is big business. And I would commend to your listeners, have you seen the Vice magazine video documentary called Hiding the Homeless?
No, I'm going to go check it out.
Please do, because one of the things it focuses on are the Western cities that tend to get absolutely no coverage in on the coasts and the media centers, and it focuses on Boise.
And
looks at what cities do to hide the homeless. So just type hiding the homeless into your search engine and Vice magazine and look at the segment on Boise. And ask yourself, does this not also apply to Portland? And when's the last time we talked about a homeless problem in Boise? We don't, because Boise isn't part of the media center, the consciousness of the Brooklyn to Los Angeles axis of who tells the story of America.
You know what, Mitch? I swear to God, I think that, you know, when I look at how these stories hit us from the media, it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder, you know, because when you're in the middle and you're talking with people who are living it, and you see that there's big chunks of it that somehow get left out, or there's some big chunk of it, of this story, that's shoehorned in there about why it's their fault, it's quote their fault unquote, that they're in that position, it just fascinates. Mitch, we're gonna cut you loose and go on to the next caller. I'm totally looking that up. Vice magazine.
Let me make one more metaphor.
All right, go ahead,
and
Mitch.
That paradigm shift is for all of us who want to deal with this situation that is too big for any county or city municipality. And that is, you were very right to point about the jails being the dumping grounds, and to remind people about the poorhouse system, which was also incarceration. But I want people to ask themselves, because all we hear about is the Middle East and wars in far-off lands, I want people to ask themselves, if our government looked at what the damage that our own economy has done to our people, the way that they look at, what if a foreign enemy, what if the Iranians, instead of our economy, had caused so many people to be homeless and living under bridges? What if we could pin that on a foreign enemy? You think the money wouldn't be there tomorrow for one overarching national program that would make sure everybody had an indoor place to be?
Mitch is asking fascinating questions. He's putting the bubbling pots on the table. Thanks a lot for calling, Mitch.
Thank you, Lisa, for doing it.
And, I mean, I think this issue of the fact that it is a national, well, it's an international, an ancient international issue, right? Because why was Jesus born in Nazareth? Whatever. But, it's not that Joseph and Mary didn't have a place to live, but the government was displacing them and forcing them to go someplace else where they didn't even have a place to stay, in ancient times even. But I think that Mitch's point, I think this is on point for education policy as well. These things are established, these situations, these issues are established by the federal government at the top and passed down to local communities that have no hope to figure out a way or to rub the resources together to solve the problems of what's wrong with our school systems and how do we pay for them, or you know, how do we house all these people in an economy, as Michael was saying, in a red hot real estate economy? Because don't we want a red hot real estate economy? And we haven't even talked about what Airbnb has done to make this worse. Although I know plenty of people who now are choosing not to offer a room in their house to people and instead making it available to Airbnb, which I think causes its own problems. But and we do have another caller on the air. Let's see if we can slide that caller onto the air. You there? No. So, caller on the air? Tom. Tom, is that you? What's going on?
Yes, I'm here. And I'm an old man, and I've noticed that the homeless problem has gotten greater and greater, and it's become just very visible to everybody. And it seems to be an economic problem, and the problem seems to be that our politicians have become the minions for the corporations, and the problem is only going to get worse as the corporations become more and more powerful. The politicians are not going to do anything for the people. They're just focused on helping the corporations, and this TPP plan that's coming up now, I think the proper name for that is the plantation plan. That's going to turn the United States into a corporate plantation, and all the other countries that are participating in that plan. And this is being egged on by the politicians, who are being funded by the corporations. And
Tom, you know what's trippy about what you just said? I'm remembering when Reagan was president, right? We had the Reagan Revolution. I hear people talk about revolution all the time. We have lived through a revolution. It was the Reagan Revolution, where he defunded mental health. He closed down the state hospitals, but didn't provide any local funding, unfunded mandates for mental health care. Basically destroyed the education system. You know, there's a link between education and incarceration. Basically, sometimes I wonder if what we're seeing now, as you just said, you know, I'm an old man, I'm an old woman. And I think about when I was a little girl, I think about the first time I ever saw a human being living in a cardboard box, right? It was in the late 70s. It was in France, okay? It just makes me think how we look around and see how things are now, but we don't really necessarily stop and think, what were the roots of those things? Where did they come from? You know, all these things that, I'm going to say it, Reagan Republicans did 20, 30 years ago. This is, as Malcolm X said, the chickens coming home to roost. But Tom, can I ask you questions about like the Depression? I mean, remember that, like the Depression? I'm not saying that you were born then, but I'm saying that like the government got scared of everyday people, right? Bankers were jumping out of windows of high buildings where their fancy bank offices were. Tom, I was like, what's the difference between now and the Great Depression? That's what I'm getting at. And what are we going to do about it?
During the Great Depression, we had FDR, and right. He did a lot for the people. And then we got a Democrat like Clinton, who created NAFTA, which just
accelerated the destruction of the economic system, basically.
The lowering of the money that people could make working. I mean, the working class people haven't had an increase in 30 years, and yet the prices of everything has gone up except wages. I mean, the TPP, the plantation plan, we're all going to be working on this plantation for the corporations, and their minions, the politicians, are just rubbing their hands in gleeful anticipation of all the money that they're going to make from helping this all happen. And our president, a black man, I'm a third-generation Democrat. He's just participating with this. I cannot.
He doesn't really run the country. He doesn't really run the country. Do you know what I'm saying? He doesn't. And I'm watching here in Portland. I'm seeing Jules Koppel Bailey, and Ted Wheeler, the Oregonian. They're both going to be running for mayor of Portland, right? The elections are coming up roughly a little less than a year. The Oregonian is doing match to match, head to head with those two. You know, what do they think about houselessness? And then you read everything they say, and you're just thinking of, you know, Charlie Hale said roughly the same kind of thing. Jefferson Smith said roughly the same thing. But these people don't really run the city. They don't have the power to do what they say that they think that they're laying out. That's the part that really gets me.
Well, they say a lot of things and do absolutely nothing. I mean, it's easy. Words come out of your mouth at 98.6 degrees and quickly just become part of the atmosphere. There's nothing about what politicians say that have any credibility for the most part.
All right.
Look at what they do.
All right, Tom. We're starting to run out of show. I'm going to cut you loose. I really thank you for calling, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
Making some very big points there about what the Republicans and the Democrats have done or not done to bring us to this
moment. Yeah, they're holding
hands
and they're running us into the ground.
Right. All right, Tom. And we have one more caller, I believe. Let's see if we can get them on the air. We have Rasan. What's going on? What's on your mind today, sir?
Well, Miss Loving, wonderful show. I'm going to attempt very quickly to kind of tie all of this in because you broadened this conversation quite deeply. Oregon, with regards to its laws and its formation, being the 33rd last of the constitutional states of the Union, it is the zoning in our particular area of Portland and Multnomah County that disallows people to be able to creatively house themselves, their families, their cousins. With regards to mixed usage or residential zoning or commercial zoning, Portland has a very unique system for all of that that really binds people to be able to expand dwellings, add living spaces to their residential quarters or commercial quarters. And so that creates the huge problem of how do we house ourselves in this area that is right now, we're the jewel of the nation and the country. So although I agree that we should also have a national focus, but we should recognize how unique Portland, Oregon is with regards to the rest of the country. We're one of just three states similar to Texas and Arizona with regards to our laws, but we have a public-private partnership that takes place in the commerce of this area that creates a unique situation. So I think that if we take a look at the zoning issues and really focus and attack there, as well as you mentioned something about the jail system with regards to the caller, Michael, that talked about the impounding. We have dog pounds. What was the comment? You have dog pounds and the people pound are the jails?
Yeah,
and so I want to just take a second to, if we took a look at the Clark County jail system, their bail bond system, and the relationship that it has with the judges and the public defenders, we have a private jail right in our backyard. And the Southern Washington and its counties, Marion County, Clark County, and Camas County, they are the bloodsuckers of the Portland metropolitan area because the money making that takes place in Southern Washington is completely based upon employees in Portland for Washingtonians.
Whoa.
And so, I just wanted to make that little quick connection.
I'm going to dig into that. We're starting to run out of show. I really want to thank you for calling. Next time, I hope you call much sooner. And we are running out of show. What Hassan just said about zoning, huge. And I've been listening to people in Seattle talk about the same thing. Like, you think that gentrification just started, but it happened when the zoning was put into play. So we're going to go back to Adam. Adam, why should people be coming to Vancouver this Wednesday?
To be part of the solution. I want to, it's part of, well, to, of course, to also to pay your respects for those who have passed and add anyone else to the list if you know someone who's passed and to meet people and to make connections and to collaborate because this is how things are done, a community coming together for a common cause and looking for the solution, be part of the solution. This is where solutions start is when people come together. We also have every year, every city does a point in time contact, a point in time count. And on the 28th is when we do our count of our homeless. And so I would urge anyone and everyone who is houseless to go to the Project Homeless Connect. That is one of the main counting spots, and that'll be on the 28th, and they can go to my website to get information on that. Also, if I do everything that we do, me and Ren do everything we do it for free. So if anyone wants to make a donation, they can also go to our website and donate to what we do.
All right.
Or to donate to this cause if they're not able to come out to the memorial on Wednesday.
Right on, Adam. Just and your website one more time is?
Outsidersin.org.
Right on. Thanks for tuning in. Adam Kravitz and organizers of the Homeless Memorial Day in Vancouver. It's Wednesday, December 30th. At Esther Short Park, 7 p.m. Connect with them on their Facebook page or go to outsidersin.org. That's I-N-N. And thanks for listening.
Okay, it's a semi-conscious b-boy, third day of Kwanzaa, Ujima, collective works and responsibilities to make our brothers and sisters problems our problems and to solve them together. So what we do is we light that second red candle and pray for a way to make sure we're better stewards of our family, to help each other without hurting ourselves in the process, know what I mean? So as you get together and help each other, make sure your children see you so they have a model of people supporting and blessing each other, know what I mean? And after that, happy Kwanzaa.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running from January 15th through February 8th. Real Music explores the lively interplay between sound and image, music and culture. Opening night, January 15th, will be Roxy the Movie, directed by Frank Zappa. Filmed over three nights in December 1973 at the Roxy Theater in Hollywood, Roxy the Movie encapsulates the qualities that made Frank Zappa a revolutionary musical pioneer. That's January 15th at 9:15 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. Lord, I wish I was a